Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Crunch Time. It is presented by OrthoCincy Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority for work, sports, and everyday injuries. You can go online to schedule your next appointment and learn more at OrthoCincy.com. That's OrthoCincy.com. I am your host, Double T Travis there. Glad to be with you on this Monday evening jam-packed show, as always. The rundown, we'll get to that right out of the chute, and then jump right into these topics, 30 minutes of nonstop sports conversation. The Milan Miracle 70th anniversary celebration happened not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before. But we want to kind of go back to that. We did get some great audio from some of the former players, Bobby Plump, Ray Kraft, Gene White, to name a few. We're also going to hear from the writer of the movie Hoosiers and one of the actors as well. So we're going to get to that at the top of the show. We're also going to talk about the Switzerland County High School Athletic Hall of Fame class of 2024. Got the start of the high school baseball and softball seasons that we will get into, EIAC and ORVC, and then going to touch briefly on the college basketball tournaments and Reds opening weekend and FC Cincinnati at the top of the table yet again in MLS. So some good things happening locally with our professional teams as well. So without further ado, let's jump into this first topic here tonight and talk about that Milan Miracle and the 70th anniversary celebration. And 1,000 people, or over 1,000 people, attended this great event that happened at Milan High School. Our very own Charlie Jackson was there taking photos and interviewing some of the former players and cast members from the movie Hoosiers. It's an opportunity for community members to get out and mingle with those individuals, take pictures, get autographs, and hear stories about the 1954 championship and, of course, the making of the movie Hoosiers, which we've all probably seen more times than we can count. If you didn't get a chance to go out to that particular event, I know we talked about it a little bit last Monday, but we do have photos from the event and a little rundown of what happened at the 70th anniversary celebration, which was put on by the fine folks at the 54 Hoosiers Museum. If you've never been there, that's another place you got to go to learn more about the history of this 1954 state championship win. 32-30, it showed on the scoreboard out there at Milan High School during this celebration. Just to remind everybody, that final score with Bobby Plump making the game-winning shot. And Bobby Plump was a player that we did catch up with. We will start with him and why this 70th anniversary celebration was so special for he, his teammates, and the Milan community.
What makes it special is the 70th anniversary of our victory of Milan, 1954 state champions, and nice to see all the crowd here.
Well, Mr. Plump, a man of few words, but awesome to see him at the 70th anniversary celebration because he's such a big part of the Milan Indians and their story in 1954, not only hitting the game-winning shot in the championship game, but Mr. Basketball in the state of Indiana would go on to play at Butler at Hinkle Fieldhouse and was the most valuable player on their team in 57 and 58, a member of the College Basketball All-Star team in 58, and was inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame in 1981. Also caught up with a couple of Plump's teammates, Ray Kraft and Gene White. Right now, let's hear from Ray Kraft and what it meant for him to be at the 70th anniversary celebration.
So I was a starting guard on the 54 state championship, and it's special because I've lasted 70 years and I've got to celebrate it. And it's so wonderful to see so many people to come out and celebrate with us. So that's what I, and my, I got some family with me, kind of makes it special too.
Well, as Ray alluded to there, he was a starting guard on that state championship team and was the leading scorer in the title game against Muncie Central. He also played on the team's 53 state finalist squad and was named to the Indiana All-Star team, was All-State, All-Semi-State as a senior, twice on the All-Regional team, and played 4 years for Tony Hinkle at Butler as well. And then he coached for 10 seasons, including a stint at Milan, and he was inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame in 1991. Another Hall of Famer recently inducted, Gene White. He was there at the Milan 70th anniversary celebration as well. And like I said, Charlie Jackson caught up with Mr. White.
And it's just amazing this can happen. It's just saved by the fact that the state went A, B, C, and D, and we were, when we played, there was just one state champion.
Gene White was just inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame just a few days before the 70th anniversary celebration. But another member of that 54 state championship team who earned all sectional, all regional, and all semi-state his junior and senior season. So he was a big part of the runner-up team as well. Senior year, he earned all state. And upon graduation, he went to Franklin College, where he played basketball and baseball. He later coached at Franklin from 87 to 94, led the women's team to 158 wins, second all time. So had a great coaching career after a really solid high school career and, of course, playing two sports at the collegiate level. But just another Hall of Famer from this 54 state championship team. Then you add in Roger Schroeder as that fourth Hall of Famer inducted in at 2015. Marvin Wood, the head coach of the team. And I go back to a social media post that Bobby Plump had before Gene White went into the Hall of Fame. He was talking about that Hall of Fame pedigree of this Milan team. You could only dress 10 players back then. So when 40% of your team would go on to be Indiana High School Basketball Hall of Famers, I guess it kind of adds up how you can see that this tiny school with not that many kids to choose from could become state champions. And Plump went on to say, and I'm paraphrasing all this, they maybe didn't have the most talented team in the state, but they did have the best team. Their chemistry was unmatched, and that was on display in not only the 53 state tournament, but in 54 when they were able to cut down the nets. But I did want to mention Roger Schroeder and look at his Indiana Hall of Fame bio. He was a multiple sport athlete at Milan, but was on the state finalist team, the state championship team. He would go on to play at Franklin College, where he earned two varsity letters there. So this was a guy that actually said he came off the bench. He was in the second five, but a very, very good player for the Milan Indians, of course, helping them win that 54 state championship. And then you look at head coach Marvin Wood being in the Hall of Fame as well. And Marvin Wood in the Hall of Fame because of his coaching career, but also his playing career as well. He was a four-year performer at Morristown, all-regional team as a freshman. Played 3 years for Butler University. That was kind of a favorite place to go for a lot of folks back then, it seems. But a 22-year coaching career. Of course, the 54 state championship is going to be the one that sticks out for everyone, but he was the Southeast Indiana Coach of the Year in 53 and 54. In 74, he was the District 1 Coach of the Year and was inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, in 1975. So it goes without saying, absolute awesome team, one of the most historic sports moments there's ever been. Specifically in the state of Indiana, I don't know that anything will ever top it. The only thing that maybe would have come close is if Gordon Hayward would have hit the half-court shot to beat Duke in the national championship game in Indianapolis, because we're talking about the Butler Bulldogs, almost winning a national championship on a half-court shot with the hometown team playing in downtown Indy. That would have rivaled it, but I don't know that anything will ever top the 54 state championship, in particular on the basketball floor, especially because everything's class now. You got four classes in the state of Indiana. Back then, it was just one class, and it's still to this day, 70 years later, it is mind-boggling what this team was able to do, considering the size of their school and how much bigger some of these other schools were that they beat, particularly Muncie Central in the championship game. So I know it's a story that has been told a million times from a different million vantage points. Dependent on whether you were a player in the game or maybe you were at the game back then or you just grew up hearing about it, being from Milan or Southeast Indiana. But this is a story that is going to live on forever because of the magnitude of it and how special it is that this group of people accomplished such an amazing thing. So I think it's really cool that Milan was able to put on this 70th anniversary celebration and that, you know, a handful of the players are still around to enjoy that. And there was also some of the fine folks from the movie Hoosiers, which is one of my favorites of all time. I've watched that movie more times than I can count. Used to be able to recite it really well, but I don't watch it as often anymore as I used to. Maybe back when I was playing high school basketball, it's almost like I would play a game, I'd go home and I would watch Hoosiers at night, something like that. But anyways, a couple of the folks that were there, Dr. Steve Holler, he played Raid, number 25, in the movie Hoosiers also had Brad Long, who was Buddy, number 14, and we did catch up with Brad Long. But before we get to that, I want to talk to Angelo Pizzo. He was the screenwriter for the movie Hoosiers, and Charlie Jackson asked him why he decided to write the film.
I wrote the movie because I grew up with...
Awesome. Can I have you state your name and then why you wrote the movie?
Angelo Pizzo. I wrote the movie because I grew up with the story of the little team that could and did, and I thought that David Goliath underdog movies were something that worked. And to me, I knew basketball in Indiana, having grown up here, and wanted to capture something that really kind of gave the audience a feeling of the relationship of basketball and the people here in the state and what it meant to them. And I thought that the Mile End Story was a perfect vehicle for that.
And who was the hardest to work with?
The hardest person to work with, honestly, was Gene Hackman. Yeah, he wasn't really sure that he could have or should have taken the part. He kept on saying, this is how bad my career has gotten. I'm stuck in this middle of nowhere, amateur night in Dixie production. And he kept on telling Dennis Hopper, this is going to be the end of my career, this stupid movie. So that's, yeah, he was tough.
All right, that was screenwriter Angelo Pizzo, who wrote the movie Hoosiers and said there at the end that Gene Hackman was a little difficult to work with at that time. Of course, Gene Hackman played the role of Norman Dale, the head coach of the Hickory Huskers in that movie. And I think Gene Hackman was the perfect person to play that role. I don't think that that movie killed his career at all. I think it actually is a highlight of his career because he was absolutely fantastic. Could not picture anybody else playing that role. And I did mention Brad Long, who played Buddy, number 14, and you're going to hear a little from him here in just a moment. But actually, one of my favorite parts from the movie is when Gene Hackman is asking Buddy to play a little tighter defense. He wants to know what flavor bubble gum the offensive player is chewing by the end of the game, and he ends up fouling out. And wouldn't you know, it was a Dentine, said Buddy. But here is Brad Long, who played Buddy in the movie Hoosiers.
To do something like this 70 years later, that they're still talking about this event, 70 years later, start with that. But then the fact that these guys, there's an old cliche, nice guys finish last, doesn't apply here. These are the nicest guys in the world, and they did a special thing, and they're talking about it all these years later. And they all came back today, the ones that could make it, and this gym was filled today. So I just think it's a special day for Indiana high school basketball and what they did all these years ago.
Awesome. And then your favorite part about partaking in the movie Hoosiers?
Probably just the camaraderie. Of course, we had a ball filming the movie, but to me, it was all the stuff outside of filming, off the court, the hijinks that happened in the hotel where we stayed, the relationships that we built. You know, you get a bunch of 18 to 23-year-old boys and put them up in a hotel, there's going to be some great funny things that happen. So we, us guys, still talk about all that, you know. And it's like picking up with your college roommate. Whenever I see Holler, if I haven't seen him for 2 years, which that's, we usually get together before that, but we pick up right where we left off. So that relationship. So to me, that's what makes it special.
Yeah.
And then just being part of such an iconic event with a great writer who got it right. You know, there's people that come up to me now, they'd be in their 80s and say, we had those caravans, we had those barbershop scenes. So they want, it was realistic. You know, it's, he captured it. So.
All right, that's going to do it for our segment on the Mile End Miracle 70th Anniversary Celebration. I didn't get a chance to get all that audio out for you last Monday, so wanted to make sure I got it on the show tonight so you could hear from Bobby Plump, Gene White, Ray Kraft, Angelo Pizzo, and Brad Long. Hopefully that was a treat for you. I enjoyed listening to them talk, maybe more so about the movie than the celebration itself, if I'm being quite frank. I thought the celebration was absolutely awesome, but Hoosiers is definitely... in my top five favorite movies of all time. Like I said, I've seen it a million times and might be going home and throwing that on this evening now that I've talked about it enough. So, again, hopefully that was an enjoyable segment for you going down memory lane with that 1954 state championship win, of course, the making of the movie Hoosiers. While we're on the kind of same topic of Hall of Famers, because we talked about five of them from the Milan 54 team, let's go ahead and hit on that quickly with the Switzerland County Athletic Hall of Fame class of 2024 set to be inducted. It is a small class, but I certainly want to recognize these individuals this evening before we break and come back and talk some high school baseball and softball. But this class is going to be inducted this Saturday, actually. Excuse me, looking at the wrong date there. This Thursday, April 4th at Belterra. I am all over the place right now. Yes, Thursday, April 4th at Belterra, the Pacer Varsity Club dinner will be held to recognize Harold Hickman, David Buckwhite, and David Hollywood Peelman. Now, I want to start with Harold Hickman. He was an attendee of VV High School during a very, very tough time in our nation's history. It was right in the heart of World War II, and he earned seven letters at VV High in basketball, baseball, and track. He was actually captain of the basketball team his senior year, and then after graduation enlisted in the U.S. Navy and served from 44 to 46. He would end up going to Franklin College, where he played the football team. He ran track for a year as well, and then he entered coaching as a basketball coach at Edinburgh, won a sectional and a regional in his second year, left there and became the head coach at Franklin College. So moved up the ladder, had a nice stint there. And then he continued to be a teacher and a coach, retired as a school administrator. Actually, he was at Aurora High School there for a while. So well-traveled was Harold, and he's going to be inducted into the Pacers Athletic Hall of Fame on Thursday. And special recognition going to David Buckwhite and David Hollywood Peelman. For many years, you could not attend a Switzerland County basketball game without hearing the chant of airball from the front row. That would be courtesy of Buckwhite. And then along with Hollywood Peelman, they became Pacers fan number one and number two, always in the thick of things. Buckwhite, unfortunately, no longer with us. But Mr. Peelman still gracing everyone with his presence, occasional appearance from him at Pacer games. So, you know, we talk a lot about high school athletics and the coaches on the sidelines and the players that are on the field or whatever playing surface it might be. But the fans go a long way to making that a great experience for the student athletes. Without any fans, it wouldn't be the same experience. So it is guys like David Buckwhite and David Hollywood Peelman that make high school athletics so enjoyable, because they're just passionate people about the local sports team, whether they had kids in school or not. It's just what you used to do. You used to just go to the games and support the local school, whether you had a tie to it or not. It's not necessarily like that anymore. So I think it's pretty cool that they're giving some special recognition to those guys. So again, April 4th is the date with that Pacer Varsity Club dinner. I'm trying to combine words now. I'm just going to direct you to EagleCountryOnline.com. You can learn all you need to know about this class with the Athletic Hall of Fame at Switzerland County High School, because quite frankly, I need a break because I'm fumbling over my words. When we come back, I'll try to do better talking some high school baseball and softball. This is Crunch Time on Eagle Country 99.3. Welcome back to Crunch Time, presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. OrthoSensi.com for all the need to know. That's OrthoSensi.com. Do want to get into some softball and baseball talk as the spring sports season continues to roll along. Many of our area teams have played a game or two or more, others awaiting their first game of the season. And this is going to be a bad week for baseball and softball, I would think, because it looks like we're going to get some heavy rain today and tomorrow, and maybe even some rain on Wednesday as well. So hopefully some games can get in, but if not, not the worst case scenario. It's early in the season, still time for games to be made up. So not going to be talking about any specific matchups that were expected to be played this evening due to the potential for inclement weather. So do want to run down some of the standings for our area teams. We'll talk some statistics for those that have provided some of that stuff or put it on their Max Preps page. Again, I told you I was going to be better. I am already struggling out of the gate here in the second half. But let's start in the EIAC with softball. Got Greensburg out of the chute, 3-0, and this is just overall record. Haven't been any conference games so far this season, but this Greensburg Pirates team, they've scored 22 runs. They've only allowed two. That's in three games against Tri, Madison, and Jacksonville, so a fantastic start there. Franklin County, 2-0. They have a 9-4 win over Hagerstown and then a 3-1 win over Cambridge City Lincoln over the weekend. And this is a team that is being led right now by Addison Bischoff. She's hitting .500. Through those two games with a .714 on-base percentage. Madison Perleberg, .400 average, team-high 3 RBI, and Kendall Kane and Bella Lee each 1-0 in the pitching circle. So a good start for the Franklin County Lady Wildcats. Batesville is 1-0. After a 20-10 win over South Ripley, Callie Fletcher out of the gate. 1,000 batting average just through that one game, but knocked in 5, so a great start. Caitlin Fox scored 5 runs in this game, and Ava Hilbert and Renee Lecker both going deep for the Bulldogs as they outscore South Ripley 20-10. That had to be a fun game to be at. A lot of runs coming across home plate. South Dearborn off to a 2-2 start, wins over Harrison and Cambridge City Lincoln, and then they have 2 1-run losses, one to Dixie Heights. They lost a 1-run game to Taylor over the weekend, but a pretty decent start there. East Central's off to a 2-1 start, 30 runs scored, 13 allowed. They have wins against Richmond and Madison. Their one loss to Columbus North, a narrow loss, but Paige Callahan, Ella Bruss, and Kylie Ferreira each have 4 RBIs through those 3 games, so they're leading the offense, while Montana Plymouth is 2-0 in the pitching circle, a 1.75 ERA, 19 strikeouts, 0 walks, so commanding that strike zone, throwing a lot of strikes, striking a lot of batters out, not putting anybody on base. That is a good recipe for success for Montana Plymouth. So Connersville, Lawrenceburg, Rushville, they have not played any games thus far. Connersville is the defending champ in the EIAC, going 14-0 in the conference last year. Lawrenceburg, they got a couple young ladies in the middle of their lineup that can really hit the ball, so expect them to be a tough team to go up against this year. And then you have Rushville, who I have not looked into a whole lot to this point. I will be honest with you there. But they have yet to play a game with those two other schools. In the ORVC, got teams that have played a game or two. Southwestern's 2-1. Switzerland County's 0-1, South Ripley 0-1, Jacksonville 0-2. You got Rising Sun and Shaw that haven't played any games yet. Rising Sun expected to be very good this year, as is Milan, who is 4-6. It depends on how you look at their record, though. They played 6 games in Tennessee, as they did last year. They lost all 6 of those games against some really quality opponents, but since they've been back in Indiana, they're 4-0. So maybe you look at them at 4-0 against local competition, but ever since that Tennessee run, they have been lights out, and a couple of thrilling games over the weekend. They win a doubleheader against Ryle. Both games went into extra innings. They win the first game 5-4 in 8 innings, and then 17-15 slugfest in game 2. That also went 8 innings. Looking at the stats from those two games, Kennedy Bodie in the first game was 4-for-4, 3 doubles, 4 runs batted in. She also tossed 8 innings, giving up 5 hits and 3 runs, struck out 14 batters. In the second game, a lot more offense. Chloe Hunter, 5 for 6, 2 runs, a double, and 3 runs batted in. Mallory Eaglin goes 4 for 6 with 2 runs, a homer, and 3 knocked in. And Kennedy Bodie right back at it, 4 for 5, 3 runs scored, and 3 RBI. So Kennedy Bodie actually goes, 8 for 9, scores 3 runs, knocks in 7, pitches in both games, and Milan knocks off a good Ryle team twice in extra innings. They've also had a 17-0 win over Oldenburg Academy. We're going to talk about Kennedy Bodie a lot this season. She was an All-State player as a freshman, already on that All-State trajectory as a sophomore. She throws a 5-inning no-hitter against Oldenburg with 13 strikeouts. She's 2-0 so far. That ERA up just a little bit, 4.74, 63 strikeouts, 29 walks. I know she going to want to get that walk total down. Hitting 704 at the plate. She's got 19 runs batted in already. Mallory Eaglin and Chloe Hunter providing some good bats in the middle of the lineup, too. Each have 10 RBI, and Emma Voss has scored a team-high 12 runs. So, again, some Island team that tied for the conference championship in the ORVC with Rising Sun last year. I would expect both of those teams to be in the running for the conference crown again this year. And both of those teams, I think, are looking at postseason play and looking at some deep runs this season because they have those type of teams. So that's how things have been shaking out so far in the world of softball in the EIAC and ORVC. In the world of baseball, even fewer games have been played there, so this is going to be a little bit of a quick segment. But again, this is going to be a couple of sports we're going to talk a lot more about as we get into the spring. And I say this every spring, and it is true every spring. It is difficult sometimes to get these teams in for crunch time because they're playing games on Monday. We will do our best to try to get baseball and softball teams in here to talk about their seasons at some point. So if you're out there listening and you have a kid that's at one of these schools that plays on one of these teams and you think that they should be on crunch time, you can certainly reach out to us through the contact us page over at EagleCountryOnline.com. Give me a call while I'm in the office now Monday through Friday. I'd be glad to entertain any team that wants to come on to crunch time. So we can all work on that together. But let's go EIAC baseball. Batesville, one of the favorites in the conference this year, starting the season ranked in 3A, 1-0 after a 13-0 win over Rising Sun. Eli Leuchinger pitching a great game there, got backed by some awesome offense. So easy win for Batesville out of the chute. Franklin County's off to a 2-0 start, 11-7 win over Milan. They were a 7-0 winner over North Decatur. Ben Becker, wanted to give him a shout-out, off to a great start, 500 average and 5 ribbies for Franklin County. Lawrenceburg off to a 2-0 start after a little bit of a down season last year. I think they kind of underachieved with the amount of talent that they had on that team, but they get a sweep over a couple of Northern Kentucky teams. They beat Boone County 8-7 and then back that up with a 9-0 win over Lloyd Memorial. Colton Chase and Tyler Abbott both knocked in a couple runs against Boone County. Nolan McClain had a great weekend. He goes 3-for-5, scored 2 runs in the first game. And then against Lloyd Memorial, he goes 4-for-4 with 2 runs and 3 RBI. Dustin Shaw and Noah Reeder knocked in a couple for Lawrenceburg as well. So a great start for the Tigers. And they got a brand new turf field at Lawrenceburg High School that looks very, very sharp. I'm sure those young men are going to have a ball playing on that field this year for Lawrenceburg. Where were we? Connersville's 1-1. East Central off to an 0-1 start with 11-3 loss to Shelbyville. Greensburg and Rushville waiting their first games of the season. In ORVC baseball, Switzerland County off to a 1-0 start. They knocked off Southwestern Shelbyville over the weekend, 12-1. Cooper Todd, 3-for-4 in that game, knocked in 3. Keegan Gross and Blaine Otter both knocked in a couple of runs for the Pacers. Southwestern is 3-1. South Ripley 1-1. Milan 1-1. Jacksonville and Rising Sun dropping their first games of the season. Shaw Memorial yet to play on the baseball diamond. So again, we're going to jump into some of these teams, a little bit closer looks at them as we continue on in the spring sports season. But just about to run myself out of time, wanted to get a couple of thoughts out about the college basketball tournaments and then the weekend from the Reds and FC Cincinnati. You got the big Iowa-LSU game tonight in the women's bracket, as there's only 2 more spots left in the semifinals. This Iowa-LSU game, a rematch of the national championship game a year ago that LSU won. So that's going to be a fascinating matchup. I'm going to be locked in on that one at 7 o'clock tonight. USC and UConn will contest the other Elite Eight game to see who joins South Carolina and NC State in the Final Four. I do have South Carolina and Iowa in my championship game, I believe, with South Carolina cutting down the nets. But if you are a fan of basketball, I would suggest watching Iowa and LSU tonight. I think UConn and USC's got a chance to be really good as well. But the star power there for LSU and Iowa with Caitlin Clark squaring off against Angel Reese, and they have a little bit of history against one another on the floor. In the men's basketball tournament, the Final Four is set. It's going to be UConn and Alabama on one side, Purdue and NC State on the other. The Purdue game, was fantastic against Tennessee just yesterday. Zach Edey pours in 40 points, and then he cuts a portion of the net without getting on the ladder because he's humongous, and he actually handed off some of that net to Gene Katie, a former head coach of Purdue that never made it to the Final Four, but the first trip to the Final Four since 1980 for the Boilermakers. Zach Edey versus DJ Burns is going to be a fantastic matchup in the Final Four, and then UConn, the defending national champion, they go on a 30-0 run against Illinois. I'm still taking them to win, hands down. Best team in college basketball until somebody else says otherwise. So got that to look forward to over the weekend. And then how about the Cincinnati Reds? They take 2 out of 3 from the Washington Nationals. Frankie Montas was great on opening day in his first start as a Red. 6 innings, 4 hits, 0 runs. Thought Hunter Green and Nick Martinez, they were decent on Saturday and Sunday. Will Benson, he is on fire to start the season. Hit the big 2-run homer to tie the game with 2 outs yesterday after Jonathan India had a 10-pitch at bat to keep the inning alive. And then after Benson goes deep to tie it, Christian Encarnacion Strand gets his first hit of the year with a home run a couple pitches later to basically steal the series, because it looked like the Nationals were going to do that after a come-from-behind win on Saturday, and then they let one slip through their fingers on Sunday. But the Reds will take 2 out of 3 all season long if they can. And for FC Cincinnati, the beat goes on. They played from behind for a little while in the second half on Saturday night in Charlotte, but 8 minutes of stoppage time, they get a goal about a couple minutes into that to steal a draw on the road and remain in first place in the Eastern Conference. They have a big one against the New York Red Bulls on Saturday in downtown Cincinnati. So the Reds and FC Cincinnati looking good so far this spring. And hopefully the show was good here this evening and you enjoyed it. I enjoy it as always. Love talking sports, whether it's high school athletics, which we do primarily on here, but I like when I can sprinkle in some of this other stuff that's interesting to me. Hopefully it is to you, too. But our thanks to Ortho Sensi for their continued support of this show, and you, the listener. We'll do it again next Monday, 6 to 6:30, right here on Eagle Country 99.3 and at EagleCountryOnline.com.